Guest Live Show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, host of the show and founder and chairman of Yes to Life, the UK's integrative medicine charity, supporting people with cancer in understanding and accessing integrative medicine. My guest this week is a cancer coach, and if you're not familiar with this concept, this will be your chance to find out more. Aga Kahinda is a highly experienced oncology nurse who has additionally trained in coaching and some other disciplines in order to provide fuller support to people with cancer. I'm speaking to Aga over the internet. Hi Aga, I've heard a lot about your work and I'm very pleased to at last have you on the Yes to Life show.
Likewise. Hello. Hi, Robin. And great to be here and share the space with you. I'm really excited.
Great stuff. So to the person in the street, the concept of a cancer coach may seem an odd one. Do you want to summarize what's meant by a cancer coach and why you think they're a great idea?
Right. So the coaching itself is a very well-known concept already. I'm sure everyone heard about it. It's a person that you may engage with in a way to build yourself up for something, or you want to make a change in your life. You want to, you know, there is a concept of coach in your workplace or leadership coaching. So we kind of know a little bit about what coaching is. When you think about the coaching in cancer, it's a really similar way of the person that you work with who will be coaching you is someone that will create a learning space for you, a space that you can be aware or make yourself aware and then transfer your life in the way that you want to be. It's not therapy, so there is not assumption that there is something wrong that needs to be corrected. It's more about, let's take that walk together and see how can we empower ourselves in it. So that's how I'm seeing coaching.
Right, interesting distinction between therapy and coaching though, eh? That's important, yeah.
I think that is really important because for me, coaching is more about connecting into that internal ability that we already have and we may have lost along the way when we find out that we're going through a big transition in life, whether that is cancer diagnosis, whether anything else in life that may be causing this chaos a little bit. So coach comes in and kind of settle the dust a little bit for you so you can see it better. That's how I'm seeing it. And that's the difference between therapy. When I feel that therapy, it's more about, okay, so let's just see what can we correct, what can we, how can we make you better so you can deal with this, what you're seeing, in a better way.
Right. Okay, great stuff. So cancer coaches, they're for people with cancer, but are they for anyone with cancer? And actually, are they for anyone else?
Yes. So cancer coaching is for the whole ecology, I would call that. So patients, definitely, their families, their carers, their friends, anyone that is impacted by cancer, but also for staff, so for the healthcare professionals. I myself am a nurse and have been a nurse for the last 22 years. And at some stage in my career, I reach out to coaching because I felt the space that I'm sharing with my patients is quite challenging for me. I've been triggered quite a lot. I actually felt that I've reached this stage of being a little bit burned out, morally challenged on the regular basis. Therefore, I found it quite difficult to deal with. And I didn't have access to supervision at that stage. And when I reached to a coach, and I was really lucky because I have reached to a someone who was already in the cancer coaching space. And when I experienced that to myself, and when this space opened to me in a way that I could just be made aware of what's happening to me internally, how I relate that into my patients in everyday conversation with them, how I've moved from being someone who provides the information and tell people what to do to someone who witness and help people to see what's happening from very compassionate and not judgmental way, I thought, oh my goodness, this is it. That's what I want to be doing. And after that first session, with this beautiful coach in the Fountain Center, I decided then this is it. I want to be a coach and I want to implement coaching in my practice. But I also want to create a space for other healthcare professionals who need to be made aware of coaching style conversation. And because that is so good for both of us, not just for patients and the families and carers, but also for us as a healthcare professionals.
Well, that's so good to hear. I mean, the actual pressures at work on people who are working in this sector are enormous, aren't they? But they're kind of unacknowledged. I mean, everybody keeps a stiff upper lip in a very British way and goes about dealing with people who are in crisis, you know, every single day of their lives. And it's enormously stressful and must be very challenging, in fact.
Absolutely. And I feel the paradigm is changing now. We do realize how empowering others is really important because it helps us as a healthcare professionals as well. Mm. So when we have patients who's empowered, who's aware, who knows their triggers, who know how to self-regulate, it really helps us as well. So making that connections into body, mind and energy is really important. So that is changing a little bit. But I think the big shift is coming now, especially within the last 12 or 18 months really with COVID, is that we were made to aware that if we are unwell, our patients are going to be unwell as well. And now it's almost easier. So within the last 12 months, I've managed within my cancer division where I work to work towards and implementing a new way of supervision. So we created now a space for staff to be able just to sit and talk things through in slightly different way to what we used to do. We call that clinical case discussion groups. So it's very much about the awareness of what's happening to me here. How am I keeping myself well? Then I can be the best for my patients as well. And I think we're growing tremendously as a healthcare professionals in that space now. So kind of, you know, bringing the integrative approaches into NHS, that's the time now. It's absolutely fundamental to have those conversations now, to, you know, practically you see what this means to you and how you can implement. Now we can just spread the word now. It's fascinating space to be in.
Well, it sounds very exciting. And this move from, I mean, I think empowered patients were kind of seen as a threat in the past or a problem. And so it's a huge change to realise that they could actually be good for healthcare. They could actually help healthcare professionals to do their job. A very different attitude. And I think, you know, you've pointed right to it. This kind of personalising of the whole situation, of actually the professionals looking at their own condition, their own responses to what's going on, their own state of well-being and health, is the key to the whole thing. It suddenly sort of unlocks the whole thing and makes it all about humans, not whether they're doctors or patients or anything else, but about people.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. And I think that awareness is the very big and first step. So, you know, what's happening to me, then what's happening to you, and how can we make this this space to be the best for both of us? Mm. I mean, all the healthcare professionals want patients to get better. They want to, you know, they want to help. We all want to do that. And now with the rising number of patients and, you know, us having less time, we want patients to be more engaged. We want patients to be more, you know, aware and, yes, and informed about the best way of supporting themselves. And you can say that, you know, the healthcare is all about the outcomes. And yes, we are all about the outcomes, but we only increase that and we can only improve that with the well-informed and empowered patients.
Mm-hmm. Great. Okay, so will you tell us a little bit about the kind of tools of your trade? What are the ways that you engage with your clients? What kind of resources do you have to support them?
So beside the fact that I've been a clinical nurse specialist for the last 22 years, which is a massive asset,
yep.
I think, after I've trained and become a coach, I've realized that there is still so much to discover. in a way of exploring myself in that space, but also then to be able to provide that to my patients. So I've also trained in NLP, which is neuro-linguistic programming, what made me aware of the language and how we use the language as a healthcare professionals, but also then being able to point to patients, you know, what is their language pattern, what that may mean to them. And that allowed me to create a better space or greater awareness and in, you know, and feedback to them, that information to then challenge those language patterns that quite often are the mirror of their internal beliefs. Then I, of course, you know, started to focus more about using the mindfulness and creating the mindful space for patients. So I use that a lot in my conversations or everyday conversation with patients to, you know, point and give the space for them to reflect on what's happening. And I also tried an amazing technique called emotional freedom technique, tapping, few years ago, and I now use that a lot as an additional tool for empowerment to my patients. So it's a very good self-regulating tool that reduces anxiety and stress within the minutes. So this is my toolbox. But as a cancer coaches, we have many, many different ones, because we are coming from the different walks of life and in different coaching spaces. So we have coaches who are medical coaches, we've got coaches who's been operating a lot of time in, you know, in the business leadership industry, so they're coming with their richness of experiences and bringing that into that space. So there is a lot of that.
Okay, can I just ask you about one of the resources that you use, EFT? So we've not actually spoken about EFT ever on the Yes Life show, funnily enough. It's extremely widely used, but it's kind of one of those totally left field things that, like, well, what, you know, what's this tapping stuff got to do with getting anybody feeling, you know, less stressed or whatever? How does it work? And I mean, there's quite a bit of evidence to show that it does work, as far as I know. Is that right? But does anybody know why it works?
So there's a growing evidence about EFT. And what's wonderful about this is actually based on the very well-known and very well-researched methods anyway. So we're using an element of acupuncture, which has been excessively researched already. So there's, you know, 10 years of research or even more behind acupuncture. So we're using that, and we're also using the element of modern psychology, so exposure therapy, mindfulness, CBT, so cognitive behavior therapy. We are kind of combine that all together. So tapping is a very simple technique that while you're talking and kind of expose yourself into a particular emotions that cause you distress in the body, you at the same time using a exactly what it says in the tin. You use your fingers and you tap on particular acupoints on your face and your body, and you somehow send the signal into your hippocampus and amygdala, your arousal parts of the body, and calm that responses out. So when you think about how that may be used in the coaching space, is where we're having a conversation and some of the triggering triggering points of the conversation may happen, patients get a little bit, you know, stressed or worried and recognize that emotions within their body, then we use tapping just to calm that response down very quickly. And I just simply teach patients to use that tapping technique for every day. So I see patients sitting in the waiting room before they scan and they tap on the side of the hands. I see them, you know, when they're walking out of the clinical room, whether they have the breaking bad news or something, they, you know, they tap when they go out. So they are using it because it's very quick and it's very somatic as well. So that means, you know, it is using on the body itself. So that sends a really calming kind signal into your body just to calm down.
Mm. So interesting to hear that it kind of rests on the research behind acupuncture. Did it actually come from the world of acupuncture? Is it a direct offshoot of acupuncture? Did somebody who had an understanding of acupuncture develop the technique in the first place?
That's right. So Gary Craig, he knows acupuncture. He worked with acupuncture very well. And he was working with someone on phobia. And, you know, when you're going through the therapy around phobia, it is about the exposure therapy. So he's noticed that when he's using acupuncture while they're going through the therapy for phobia, all of a sudden the person calmed down very quickly. So he tried many different tapping points or very different acupuncture points while exposing people into that phobia triggers, and then he developed a protocol. So he kind of stripped the points, the acupoints, into the minimal that will have the same impact and work very quickly. So EFT has been extensively researched on many different modalities, but and people quite often may say, you know, it works for everything, it won't work for anything. But what the common denominator of all this research study is the stress response. That's what we're working on. Right. So whether that is on your cravings, whether that is on phobia, whether that is anxiety, stress or depression, what we're working on is that arousal, that stress response in the body. And this technique calms it down, reduces very quickly. And there is a biological markers as well that show us it works. So you reduce the level of cortisol, adrenaline. So, you know, there is a lot of growing evidence behind it. And it is used in especially in States and Australia a lot in post-traumatic stress disorder treatment and a lot of cravings. There's a leading university in Australia with Peter Stapleton. She's a psychologist who leads on you know, research a lot in the world, and she's done amazing study with using MRI as well, so you can actually see what's happening in the brain while we're tapping. Fascinating stuff, because it works quickly.
Yeah, exactly. Well, A, it works quickly, and B, you don't need anything fancy. You can just do it yourself. That's pretty amazing, isn't it? And it's highly non-toxic. So a pretty good remedy, I must say. Thanks for the bit of context there. It's interesting to hear where it's come from. Okay, so you have contributed to a book called Empowerment in Health and Wellness, the title of which clearly speaks to the thinking that's behind coaching. In it, you describe three pillars of empowerment: awareness, information and learning. Would you tell us firstly about the importance of empowerment and then the ways in which these three pillars support it?
Absolutely. So I've got this book right in front of me here. It's definitely worth exploring the book for, and it's really for everyone. It's not just for the patients and the carers, but definitely for the healthcare professional. And you know, empowerment, it's really important concept for the healthcare, and it results in people being more able to self-manage. That as simple as this, to self-manage this situation, and you know, exert a great influence to the determination of health. That's how I'm seeing empowerment. Empowerment is to enable. Whether you're doing that for yourself and searching for that empowerment and self-leadership, or you want to empower others, and that's what we will look at in the healthcare profession. And there are many different perspectives of empowerment as well. And I think empowerment is really, really important, especially in the healthcare profession. And the framework that we offer in this book, it focuses on those three pillars of health and wellness that will then create this empowerment. And it is the awareness. So awareness in this context is engaging with self and others within the space of the health conversation, of health and wellness conversation. And then the information. So, you know, the feedback that we may provide, plus the self-help tools and, you know, to kind of explore this personal leadership. And then learning is all about reflective practice and learning environment for our patients and ourselves as well. So we're talking about, you know, how we create learning environment for patients, but also how we as a professionals engage in learning environments. So the supervision, clinical case discussion groups, the Schwartz Round, and that sort of spaces.
Yeah, it's interesting you keep bringing things back to the kind of blurring the dividing line that's traditionally existed between patients and their healthcare professionals. They've always been seen to be in completely different places, and therefore they have their own ways of behaving based on those. But you're much more talking about the same issues being dealt with from different places by both professionals and patients.
So I was thinking about this morning, actually, when I went for my walk, and I was thinking like how for many years as a healthcare professional, I felt like I'm on the other side.
Right.
So we are meeting together from different directions. Therefore, I'm here from the perspective of knowing and giving the information, and then you as a patient, you need to follow that. And I think that's the concept that you can still see in many healthcare professionals. But just going through this self-discovering and finding this space like coaching that allowed me to see the different perspectives. And it started from me, actually. It started from discovering, you know, what's happening in here. Why do I feel this particular way? Why am I being triggered? Why am I being exposed or feel exposed in here? That allowed me then to flip around and see that we are here in this space of time with my patients, and we experience exactly the same. Right. So what is happening in here that allow me then to empower that person? And only that allow me to then be fully engaged and then fully transfer that empowerment to my patients. Mm. I think that is what I've learned over the years, that transition from giving to creating together.
Very interesting. I think, you know, some of the greatest inspirational writing has come from people who've stepped over the border, probably unwillingly, and have gone from being a healthcare expert to being sick. And they've actually completely seen the picture from the other side and realised a lot of things you're talking about the fact that this artificial division is no help to anybody.
Absolutely. It's not help at all. And on top of that, there is another barrier, I think, in here, and that is going through this empowerment journey ourselves as a healthcare professionals. We may stumble across a lot of blocks and beliefs that may have that quite are uncomfortable to us. So think about it in a way as like from the nursing point of view of what do I believe? And let's just bring the integrative approaches in the cancer care. How many of those things do we really believe in order then to transpire that into or inspire our patients with it? So going through the self-exploration journey as a healthcare professionals, we may realize, well, I don't believe half of it, or I've witnessed so much of things that proving me that this is not right. And now I am being given information around, you know, integrating different approaches, and half of them I don't believe myself. So there is a massive journey for all of us, patients and healthcare professionals, to actually change and challenge those beliefs that we may have. And they, you know, those beliefs may be coming from many years of hearing different things, witnessing different things, or learning different things. And especially in healthcare professionals, we have a big hurdle to overcome still.
Right. Very interesting. So with your book there, I said contributed to the book because a joint effort of no less than 12 people. What did you contribute to the book? What aspect did you focus on?
So I focused on the first part, on awareness and creating the awareness. And my my chapter is about grounding in times of chaos. Mm. So it focused on the importance of grounding and how to ground yourself in the present situation just to restore the mental focus when facing challenging times. And I'm exploring the different ways of grounding. So somatic, how can we use our body to ground ourselves in the present moment? The cognitive, so the things that we can do with our minds to ground ourselves very quickly. I really, really feel that grounding is one of the biggest first steps to be fully aware and fully engaged with the process of healing, and just providing people with different aspects of it. And I focus on EFT as my favorite tool,
right,
and the one that I really swear by, because it's very fast. It helps you bring your nervous responses very quickly and allow you then to come back into your prefrontal cortex, into your thinking hub, and then fully engage. Because I've witnessed so many conversations. I've been cancer nurse, and I've been, for many years, I've been what we'll call metastatic of unknown primary cancers. And I've been involved in many Breaking Bad news conversations on the daily basis. I had few of them. And they quite often been very surprising situation. People did not expect a bad news at that stage. There are people in A&E. And what I've noticed is that many times, the moment we say word cancer, people just shut down. They can't hear anything else. And we spent an hour, 2 hours trying to pull people back. And quite often it doesn't work. So I very often felt left with this feeling like that person is in the state right now, and I need to leave to move on. And it didn't feel comfortable for me. So I feel teaching people how to ground very quickly, it's really important for everyone.
Yeah, that must be very challenging from your point of view. I can imagine that, to actually, if you're left in a situation where you feel you haven't helped, and you haven't got the resources to help either, but you've just sort of dropped a bomb in there and left them to deal with it, must be, yeah, very difficult for all concerned. It's interesting. I mean, cancer is such a challenge, and I think a lot of it is the kind of the myth, if you like, that's been built up around the word cancer. You know, you just, as you said, in the conversation you get to the word cancer, it has such huge connotations for people. For many people, you might just as well say death. You know, the two things are synonymous in a lot of people's minds. And so the impact it has on people is enormous. And this, you know, our very human desire to live in a way where we're confident about the future and we're going to live forever, that sort of thing, and where everything's under control, that seems like a normal human desire to live in that way. The reality of the uncertainty of life comes crashing in the most dark way when somebody uses the word cancer and smashes that to bits very, very quickly. So it's an enormous thing to deal with, and to know how best to actually bring news like that to people is quite a challenge. But also, I think as a society, we need to kind of de-boogify the word cancer as well much more, because in a way, it's been built up as the, you know, if you don't create a huge amount of fear, then you'll never persuade people to go through cancer treatment, which can be horribly grueling. So it's sort of, you know, it's been built up in that way, you know, to have an effect. And I just think it's, a lot of it is myth, because an awful lot of people actually, cancer treatment can be successful, and it doesn't necessarily have to be such a grueling thing. So it's different for different people. And somehow we need to take the sting out of it. I don't know how, but.
Well, this is great point, because I think for me that was a pivotal point into when I moved into coaching space. I started to research or discover within myself, you know, what that word means to me. And then it's really interesting, because every word has a weight behind it.
Right.
And that weight comes from our conditioning. So what we have heard about cancer, what we have experienced of cancer, and many people are traumatized by it already from the past. So whether they had their loved ones dying from cancer, whether they've seen so many movies that portrayed cancer in a particular way. So we are already conditioned before we even go into that space. Now, that can go in both ways, really. So like with everything. So we hear the word cancer, and then the response, the way that comes with it, depends on that past experiences and beliefs that we may have around it. So this is a really good point to start to make people aware what that word means to you and where is that conditioning coming from. So whether you have evidence, and this is where the coaching comes in beautifully, because we just sit and we explore this conditioning. So, you know, what is your experience with cancer? Where is the evidence that this word, this condition is so life-threatening to you right now? And it usually comes, well, my mom had it. And then we go further. Well, that's completely different type of cancer. Or my grandma had it, whatever. You know, this what brings this emotional response comes from the experience and our what we called writing on the wall. That's what I called it, is the writing on the wall, the things that we've heard, the things that we put on that wall, and they're there. So whenever we hear it, we refer to it, and then we have these responses. So this is why I love EFT, because that's where I use it a lot. We go back, we explore those past experiences that people may have. We bring the emotional responses, and then we calm the nervous system down. So the next time the person talks about that, it doesn't have that charge anymore. So we can talk about it a bit more calmer. And as a healthcare professional, I think it's our responsibility to not re-traumatize people, to actually have this conversation then and there. So right. I've noticed that is so that you reacted to it so strongly. May I just ask why that is? You know, what is your belief?
Right.
I feel that as a healthcare professional in this breaking bad news conversation that we may have, we don't go there.
Right.
So I very rarely hear consultants asking that questions beyond the generic one. So when we ask, you know, what is your family history around cancer? And then we have person saying, well, my mom had cancer. Then we will ask, okay, what kind of cancer? So she would say that and that. And that is it. Then we move on. Then we ask about how about the father's side, all that sort of things. And I wonder if we empower our consultants and the healthcare professionals just to ask slightly, you know, diverted questions. So what is your experience with that memory? And then if we hear, you know, person saying, well, my mom had really bad experience. She was sick constantly during the chemotherapy. She had really bad time. And the question to follow that should be, so what do you believe will happen to you on this chemotherapy? And there you go. You've got that straight away lying down for you saying, well, I'm going to have really bad time. And it's going to be horrible. That's what I believe. If we can address that fear, then it's going to be much easier.
Absolutely.
You know,
there's a huge case then for education here of healthcare professionals in how to have the difficult conversation in a constructive way. Well, it sounds brilliant. Yeah, I think you're exactly right. That's the opposite of leaving somebody empty-handed with a bomb. And I was thinking as you were talking that a large part of the power of cancer comes from the fact that in the past it wasn't even talked about. People were not even told they got cancer. It wasn't a word that was mentioned. It was so bad, it was like the devil, you know, you just don't speak about it. And we have a kind of contemporary equivalent of that, I think, in as much as 50% of us are going to get cancer. And yet no one thinks it's them, and nobody talks about it, and nobody's interested in cancer or finds out about it if they don't have to. They literally leave it until the day they're diagnosed, and then it's get real time. So that is another hurdle to be overcome in a way that it needs to be in the conversation more generally, because if half of us are going to get it, we should know a bit more about it. If it's something that's in our future potentially, we'd be very well placed to know much more about it and what we can do, how we can be empowered to avoid it or at least lessen our chances. So Yeah, so it feels like it's still rather hidden in a funny kind of way, just because nobody really wants to know about it.
Do you feel that this is because it's still very triggering? It's still very raw. Yes.
Yeah.
So my feeling is that we should be talking about it, but we should be giving people tools and techniques to be able to overcome those emotional responses to it. So it's not just let's talk about it and leave people feeling scared, anxious, worried, petrified, you know, catastrophizing, because that's what will happen.
Right.
It's how we empower people then to be able to self-regulate one while having those conversations, because we may be opening a lot of traumatic past memories with the family members, with the loved ones, whoever. And this is why it's really important to introduce different tools and techniques that will allow people to calm down the responses while we're talking about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, look, your part in the book was writing about the kind of mental focus in challenging situations. And here we are, cancer, number one challenging situation. So I just want to hear how much importance you'd place on mental focus, or dealing with your state of mind, if you like, or meeting your state of mind in amongst a cancer diagnosis and responding to it. Traditionally, it's nothing to do with the picture. You just go in, you get told what you're going to get, and you get on with your treatment. That's the kind of practical side of cancer treatment. How important is addressing the mental side of it alongside that?
Oh, it's equally important, as, or maybe even more important. It's almost like we need to, we recognize that now. We're much more advanced and aware that the mental engagement, the mind engagement is equally important. We know, and I've witnessed that so many times, it almost like you can predict by looking how person's conditions, how response verbally to treatment plans and everything, and you can say how well that person will do. So definitely, I hope I'm answering the questions here in the way that it makes sense. So what I'm saying here, that the mind need to be totally buying into the plans of treatment in order for this to work well. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, it is really. I mean, you know, the thing is, as I say, it wouldn't have been given any room at all a few years ago as being of any importance what somebody thinks or how their spiritual well-being, and, you know, that wouldn't have been given any weight at all. And I suppose the move of integration is to bring in other aspects of your human condition and your overall wellness to say, actually, well, these are really important too. You can't just deal with the physical and think that you've done the job of making somebody well. And personally, I put the mental well-being actually at the top of the list. I think it's the most important thing, because how would you ever make a good decision about treatment if, for example, you're feeling hopeless? If you're in a state of hopelessness, why would you make a good choice to help you stay alive? You wouldn't. You're just not in the right place at all. So I feel it's a precondition to good treatment.
Right. So there is still a lot of work to do around that, I must say. There is still a disconnection. And I think that comes from that self-awareness of the healthcare professional. So we know and we see more and more patients being kind of being made aware of the importance of the engagement from that perspective. But that comes quite often a little bit too late, I've noticed. So it's when, instead of preempting this at the very first conversation, at every single conversation, so with your GP, with your nurses, with your cancer consultants, with your surgeons, that need to be at the front, not when people are stressed and omitting their treatments. And when we know that they're so anxious, they can get cannula in and treatment in, and then we, okay, so now you have to go and have maybe CBT or maybe have some, you know, coaching or go and see psychologists. We need to start thinking about that much earlier. So thinking about, you know, what stress, how stress impacts patients' outcomes, how stress impacts the treatment, the engagement. If we start talking about that a little bit more with the healthcare professionals, then we start making the links. At the moment, we are engaging with it, but a little bit too late, I feel.
I understand. Well, it's interesting, isn't it? This is an evolving situation, obviously. It's very interesting. You mentioned the Fountain Centre, which you're involved with. This is, for anybody who doesn't know, it's in Guildford. It's a part of the main hospital there. And I remember visiting there, must have been the first year or two of Yes to Life, actually. It must have been 2005, 2006. And it was already quite well established then. And I'm kind of interested in how you see, I mean, at that time, it got that position actually within a hospital on the basis that this is complementary medicine, which means that nobody in this unit here is going to claim they're doing anybody any good in terms of their cancer. They're just, it's nice to have a bit of this stuff on the side. So that was the basis on which the foot was got in the door. Nobody was talking about integrated medicine then, but integrated medicine is an attempt to change the status, if you like, of all the other therapies, to move them from being something as a nice to have add-on to being actually just as important as the practical physical care of the patient in terms of their cancer. And I'm just interested whether you see any kind of watershed moments in the evolution. I mean, that approach of actually getting a foot in the door at a hospital and having the stuff right there where the patients are, of course, has been very important. Even if it was a huge compromise at the beginning, I assume that it's carried on evolving as the dialogues have gone on between the oncologists and the professionals with the practitioners in the complementary medicine centre, that more understanding has been gained. There's more common ground being built about both helping the patient to recover and be well. And I'm just interested to hear your take on how that's evolved and what has been important, if you like, in moving the thing forward towards integration rather than a nice to have.
Yes, it's still nice to have. It's absolutely wonderful space.
Yes, that's true.
But I feel the biggest change at the moment is that it's a must. So every single patient gets referred to a Fountain Centre.
Right.
They get the choice straight away. Every single nurse is seeing it as a important element in patient's pathway of healing, treating, or being a patient. So that is a big change. Now, it used to be, as you say, this is something additional where you feel like, go and have a look. Now it's like you need to have it. So the leaflets are being given, the letter are being attached to every single patient. And I think this is, it feels like a small change, but it's massive.
Right.
So it's always in the upfront of our clinicians.
Mm-hmm.
And they're no longer seeing this as an additional tool, but they're seeing as an integrative approach to patient treatment. So it's almost like they have to go in there. And I think that's amazing. But now Fountain Centre and many of Fountain Centre employees are employed by the hospital, which, you know, on from that point of view, there is massive changes as well, because the hospital perceive this as now being a part of the hospital, not something on the side. So that is a big thing. There is much more work, collaborative work together. So, you know, like I run cancer awareness days for everyone in the hospital, not just for the cancer staff, but for other population within the trust. And the Fountain Centre has got the whole big session talking about, you know, what this is, why is it important. So we're already kind of infiltrating a healthcare mindset that this is this is on the pathway, it must be there. So that's really, really important. We are collaborating as a founder center with local, with Cancer Alliance, you know, building big integrative approaches to the community. So that, that is in there. And I think, you know, it's a small, small but steady movement of making sure that every patient's got access to it. And it's important. But yet, I still feel that quite often is a, it's not as proactive as it would like to be. It's more when there is an issue, it's,
a problem.
You definitely go there. So when there is a problem. So,
all right. Well, I mean, it's a very good first step to see it as a solution to a problem. I mean, that's actually a massive step in itself. But I can see why you would be slightly frustrated that it needs to come sooner. Very interesting, and I'm very heartened to hear that the NHS is putting money behind this stuff, because that is a massive barrier. In the only reason we have any complementary medicine in any hospitals in the UK is because people set up charities and just said, we've got to do something for patients, and made it happen. So the fact that the NHS is now willing to actually pay for some of this stuff is a massive step, and is actually an acknowledgement of the importance of this to patients. So that's very heartening to hear.
That's right. And I feel that the next step toward all is to change the mindset of a healthcare professional of importance of the single elements of it. Because as a whole Fountain Centre, it's amazing charity with a lot of different therapies, and that's how it's perceived. So you go and find something for yourself. But what I would like to see is, like, you know, every single nurse in at every point of contact talks about importance of breathing, importance of reducing stress, you know, how those things kind of infiltrate the patient's experience. That is really important. So it's still a lot of work of changing a mindset of the healthcare professionals of importance of those simple yet the best modifiable factors in the cancer journey.
So a perfect moment to mention Yes to Life's new course, 11 module introduction to integrative oncology for healthcare professionals. So this is designed to provide these professionals with an overview of integrative oncology, looking at all the resources available, the role they play in cancer care, who the providers are, and the evidence for their efficacy and safety. So you're presenting module 3, Stress and Resilience, just been published. So a big thanks to you for joining the venture, and I hope it's going to do some of what you've just described there, which is to bring oncology professionals up to speed with what integrative medicine is, what it can really do for people, and the full breadth of it. So is there anything you want to say about the course for any professionals that happen to be listening?
I think the most important element of this for me is that there is a massive amount of research behind it. So it's not what we used to perceive, you know, this additional thing that you may not do, but that not really matters in the grand scheme, because we are giving you a treatment that is, you know, very actually there is so much more research behind it, and it really opens your eye to it, and it almost like it makes a case for every single element of this course, and it's so worth exploring and maybe even challenging those limitations that we all have in a way of, you know, there are other stuff that may help that may not necessarily belong to me, but I can empower you to explore it.
Excellent. Okay. Anybody listening is interested, you can find out more at yestolife-horizons.org. So yestolife, one word, -horizons.org. So, huge thank you to you, Argo. We're out of time. It's been a fascinating discussion, really interesting areas we covered there, and so much to do, but we must keep busy, eh?
Absolutely, yes. Let's keep chilling away.
All right, thanks very much, Argo.
Thank you so much. Bye, Robin.
Take care. I just want to underline what we were saying about the Introduction to Integrative Oncology course. It's very inexpensive, and the presenters are of the highest caliber. If you're a healthcare professional of any kind and you're beginning to explore the potential of integration, you couldn't do better than to sign up to this brilliant 11-module course. It's CPD approved, and as an e-learning platform, you can take it at your own pace or revisit any module as you wish. Thanks very much for listening today. I'll be back next week to host another guest from the world of integrative oncology in the next Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.